history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is our fall membership drive. We'll get back to that in a moment. So, how much do you know about American history? What do you say when your kids ask about Christopher Columbus or George Washington at Valley Forge or Teddy Roosevelt's charge up San Juan Hill? Ken Davis says Americans don't hate history. They just don't like the dull version they slept through when they were in school. Today on All Sides, we'll take a tour of America's past with author Ken Davis as he sets about busting myths, setting the record straight, and always remembering that fun is not a four-letter word. Kenneth C. Davis is the author of Don't Know Much About History, Anniversary Edition. It's a newly revised, updated, and expanded edition of the book that started the Don't Know Much series. Don't Know Much About History, 20th Anniversary Edition, presents a complete survey of American history from before the arrival of Columbus in 1492, almost got that wrong, right through the events of the past decade from 9/11 through the election of Barack Obama and the first years of his administration. Ken has been a commentator on All Things Considered. He's a regular commentator on Vermont Public Radio and a frequent guest on The Takeaway and other public radio shows around the country, including Open Line with Freddie Enderle. Amazon.com calls him the King of Knowing. Welcome back to WOSU, Your Highness.
Well, thank you. Let me just buff up the crown here. And first of all, thank you for playing the Sam Cooke version as opposed to the Herman's Hermits or any of the other innumerable and unmentionable covers of that great song.
That was a nice version, too. That was a nice recording.
That was the only one.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and this is our fall membership drive. Make your pledge right now at WOSU.org or by calling 1-866-897-9678. That's 1-866-897-9678. Our goal this hour is $2,000, and we can meet this goal with your help. Online pledges count toward the goal, too, at WOSU.org. And with a pledge of support at the $120 level, our thank you gift to you will be the book Don't Know Much About History, the newest edition. This book has recently been revised, updated, and expanded by our guest today, Kenneth Davis. This book is full of great information, and it's everything you need to know about American history but never learned or were never quite sure about. Get this book and support public radio for a pledge of $120. Call right now, 1-866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org. So, Ken, wow. I guess we should have a question for our listeners. You could, of course, call and ask Ken anything you want about American history. But we also would like to know, what don't you know about American history? What would you like to find out? It's your chance to call and ask Ken. So you can impress your family and friends afterwards. 1-614-292-8513 is the number to call for that. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Ken, why are we so bad at history? Why is it so boring? I actually am a history buff. I love history, but why is it in general as a nation are we so bad at it? Because it's so interesting.
It is so interesting, and you used a couple of key words in there. I think the first one is boring. That's the first response of all too many people when they hear the words American history uttered. They say, "Oh, it was so boring. It was all those dates and battles and speeches and memorizing, you know, presidential addresses." But history is not about memorizing things. It's about real people doing real things in real places. And that's something I learned as a child. I had the great fortune, good fortune, of parents whose idea of summer vacation was camping trips to places like Valley Forge and Gettysburg and Fort Ticonderoga in upstate New York. So I always had this very, very palpable sense as a child that history happened in real places. And I remember being 9 years old and standing in a field in Gettysburg and knowing something extraordinary had happened in this place. And so when I set out to write this book, Don't Know Much About History, more than 20 years ago now, which is an astonishing idea to me, I wanted to keep that sense of realness, the humanity that the textbooks too sadly leave out. And over 20 years of having conversations like this around the country, I've heard so many times people say, I love hearing history the way you tell it. It has to be about the stories. And,
right.
And that's what I focus on. The other thing I've heard many times, and somebody's going to be mad at me when I say this, is that they got history from their football coach. And I don't know. That's not my experience.
I got science from the football coach.
Well, I've heard this so many times that I do feel that I must mention it. I hate to single out football. I'm sure there are some wonderful history teachers who are also football coaches, but I've heard too many people say, hey, the history teacher was my football coach, and he just told us to read the book and come in on Friday and he'd give us a quiz. So we have problems with it because it's boring the way we teach it. Textbooks are dreadful. And we still are stuck in some kind of patterns of, you know, either politically correct history or sanitized history that leave out all the good stuff.
My guest is Kenneth Davis. He's author of the 20th anniversary edition of Don't Know Much About History. It's revised, updated, and expanded. And if we would love to take your questions, 614-292-8513, if you want to give us a call and talk with Ken Davis. I think it's ironic, Ken, that I've read where we're hardwired to want to hear stories. It's what we're raised to do from practically birth, if you're lucky enough to be read to as an infant. And yet once we get into school, there's the curriculum tends to be facts and figures and dates and remembering chronologically instead of learning the stories behind it.
Well, a lot of that, Anne, has to do, of course, with the move towards standardized testing and the having the knowledge base to, you know, fill in those little bubbles on the AP history exam or the, you know, the college entrance exam. So that's part of it, certainly, the standardized approach. I go into schools very often. I love to talk to kids, and I have written books. I started out writing for adults, and I added a line of books for children. And I'm always amazed. You go in to talk to a group of fifth and sixth graders, how enthusiastic and excited they are about history, and they want to hear these stories, and they want to tell the stories, and they know this stuff. And then you hit high school, and you go in and talk to them, and it's it's so dull, it's so boring, because they've moved away from history as storytelling to history as, you know, a knowledge-based, fact-based system that has to be filled in on a standardized test. I think we have a lot of work to do in terms of history, like a lot of subjects in our schools. First of all, we don't spend enough time on it. Every state is different, of course. History education is no different from other types of education is left up to the states to determine. So there's no national standards for history. But most people only get a year of American history in high school. That's just not enough. We have to spend more time on it. It's just too important. Not knowing history is not only sad, it's dangerous. When demagogues say things that aren't true, or politicians for that matter, We should know that that's not right, that the Founding Fathers didn't work tirelessly to end slavery, to take one notable example. So these are not just – it's not just trivia either. This is who we are as a people. It's what our rights are and the tremendous sacrifice that went into winning us those rights, and we should understand that.
This is listener-supported 89.7 NPR News, and this is All Sides with Ann Fisher. Call 1-866-897-9678 and make a pledge of $120 and pick up your very own copy of Ken Davis's updated and revised book, Don't Know Much About History. This book is updated to include 9/11, Hurricane Katrina, the Great Recession, the election of Barack Obama, and more. Pick up this thank you gift for a pledge of $120. Go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. This is a big, fat book, and it's a hardcover, and it's quite glorious and fun to just nosedive into, which is I was parachuting into it, I should say, last night. Just asking that question, what do I want to know about? What do I want to know about? It's all here. So give us a call, 1-866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org and make that pledge right now of $120 and pick up your very own copy of Ken Davis's updated Don't Know Much About History. Steve in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thank you for having me on the show.
You're welcome.
It's very interesting. You know, One reason why I loved history was because it made me a feeling like I was traveling, even though I was sitting in a small schoolroom in a rural area. It made me feel like I was traveling and I was being there. And I used to arrowhead hunt and pick up arrowheads and musket balls, and I got to thinking later as an adult, you know, they left these things for me to learn, and now there's life growing over where there was death, you know, farmers' fields and stuff like that. And I wonder who's going to pick up parts and remnants of our history if we have something else go on.
Unfortunately, we'll be picking up discarded cell phones, I think, at this point on. But thanks for the call, and it raises a very important point, I think, Anne, and one thing I talk to teachers and parents a lot about. I mentioned my own experience as a child being taken to places. I'm a big proponent of the field trip approach to history, and parents or teachers groan when they hear that. They think of brown bags and bus rides, but when you get out and visit someplace, when you walk around, when you pick up an arrowhead, you are in touch with history. That's what makes it alive. And, of course, you don't have to go to Washington, D.C. or Gettysburg or Valley Forge. History is all around us. I'm sure there are many points of local and national interest in your area. And when you get out of the classroom, when you get out of the living room and feel and smell and touch those places, it just brings it all to life, just as the caller mentioned.
Thanks, Steve, for that call. Did you have a question? Oops, guess we lost Steve. Peggy in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Peggy.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for your program. It's really interesting. I've always loved history, I think, because when I found something that was interesting, I went to historical novels to fill in the stories that you were talking about. I remember that we always started history at the beginning, and every year we never got even as far as World War II. So I was going to ask your guest if he could give me something very interesting about World War II now that it's all coming into study at this time.
Thank you for the call. It's very interesting. Ann and I were speaking before we came on about the fact that when Bill Clinton was president, he went to Normandy for the D-Day commemoration. And actually, John Keegan, a famous British historian, was kind of shocked because President Clinton asked him to sort of fill him in on the facts of what happened there. And that's a kind of astonishing notion to me, the child of a World War II veteran and somebody who grew up on the longest day, that the American president wouldn't be clear of what happened in June 6th. But that's typical in many ways of a lot of our knowledge. We have these vague impressions that something is important. We think of them as household words, and we're not always sure exactly why they are important. World War II, I'm digging here for a quick response. I was noticing recently the fact that so many people are interested with the nuclear issue in Japan with the reactor there, and of course brought up the whole history to me of Hiroshima and how, every once in a while it comes around and we get the recollection or the memory, especially if it's an important anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima. But that was, of course, the moment in history, American history, the first and a time an atomic weapon was used, so far the only time, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, of course. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we don't think and talk and teach a lot about. It's one of those sort of embarrassing moments from our history that that school books tend to overlook. And that's part of the problem of learning history, that the unsavory moments from our past get kind of brushed under the rug because we like to paint a picture of pride and patriotism, and we lose out. Now, that's not to say that there aren't extraordinary moments of heroism and courage in World War II, and but we have to take the whole picture in and understand all of it.
And every country is guilty of that. It's
oh,
not just
course.
Americans.
No. Every country mm-hmm. wants to paint that picture, and I'm sure that Chinese textbooks today don't talk too much about Tiananmen Square or, cover their the Cultural Revolution in very different ways. So every country is capable of this. We would like to think, at least, that Americans can be honest and educated about our past. It's too important not to know, especially when we do have so many myths and misconceptions.
Peggy, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Take care. Terry in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Terry.
How are you?
Good.
Good. I just had an interesting little historical tidbit concerning when Ohio was admitted to the Union. Everyone believed it was in 1803. This is not correct. Congress voted to accept the petition for statehood, but did not vote officially on accepting the statehood petition until it took an executive order from Dwight Eisenhower in 1953 to correct that problem. And the southern states were upset about it, and they were claiming that all the constitutional amendments that were passed after 1803 were in fact invalid because Ohio wasn't a state.
I thought you were going to say it was 1804, and I was going to say, oh, we celebrated a year early, but no, it's way off.
way off. And actually, I've won some money in a few bar bets with this, number one. Number two, I had my daughter's history teacher actually say to my daughter when she recited this fact, your dad's nuts.
And daughters don't need any more reason to say their dad's nuts.
Especially mine. Yeah. So anyhow, that's just my little interjection into the conversation.
All right. Thanks, Terry.
An interesting tidbit. I'll have to follow up on that one. I will point out that, of course, Thomas Jefferson wrote what was called the Northwest Ordinance that talked about the admissions of new states that would eventually include, of course, Ohio. And it's notable. Most people learn that, of course, he included the fact that these states would come in without slavery. Thomas Jefferson actually wrote an ordinance that said no new states could have slavery, and that was stricken from the Northwest Ordinance. That interesting, once again, this contradiction between Thomas Jefferson writing all men are created equal, writing ordinances to end slavery, going back to a plantation utterly dependent upon slave labor. And that's the great contradiction of the founders, Washington, Jefferson. Almost all of the founders owned slaves or had something to do with slavery at one time. There are a few exceptions to that. And that's why that working tirelessly to end slavery comment riled me up quite a bit, because it was so historically inaccurate and really misses the importance of slavery in the first couple of hundred years of this country's history, and certainly from the time of Washington's inauguration to the Civil War, it was the issue that the nation struggled with.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and this is our fall membership drive. And our goal today, it's simple, to get your pledge of support at 1-866-897-9678 or online at WOSU.org. And in return for your pledge, we're offering you the book, Don't Know Much About History, at the $120 pledge level. This is a big book full of great information, and you'll be supporting public radio and All Sides with Ann Fisher with one phone call right now. Make a gift of $120 right now and help us reach our goal. Our goal was $2,000. We have about $1,750 to go this hour in support of All Sides. Go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. That's 1-866-897-9678. And I said it's a big, fat book, but it's a book that's been revised and updated and expanded. It now includes 9/11, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the global financial meltdown, President Obama, much more. It's a great book for history buffs and for a new generation of Americans who are still in the dark about our country's past. It's a great book for the kids as they're moving through school, don't know much about history, will change the way you look at boring history classes, too, from high school and college. And you can just nosedive into it. It's chronologically put together, but you don't have to read it from beginning to end. You can just read it as it occurs to you, as the questions occur to you. The book travels through more than 500 years of American history, from the discovery of America to the Cold War to September 11th, 2001, to the election of Barack Obama. It covers it all. It's an easy-to-read question and answer format. So give us a call right now, 1-866-897-9678, and give what you can. If $120 isn't in your budget right now, just show your support. It's time to become a member. Make the call, 1-866-897-9678. And remember that this is the way you vote for what you like to listen to on the radio, what you like to listen to online for that matter. Thanks to Cindy in Columbus. We still have $1,750 to go, so make the call. You can also go online to WOSU.org. Ken, you mentioned the President Clinton when he was in
Normandy.
In Normandy. And there are other examples, more recent examples of politicians and their misconceptions about history, let's put it that way. Maybe we could just go back over the ride of Paul Revere real quick.
I would be happy to do that. Okay. There's a famous line from, I think it was Warren G. Harding, who said, "I love Paul Revere whether he wrote or not," and that kind of says it all. But I just want to, first of all, before doing that, say thank you, Anne, for giving this opportunity, and mention to people that, as you did, the book is written in a question and answer format, and the questions are sometimes very straightforward, like, you know, what is the Mayflower Compact? It sometimes are a little bit offbeat and quirky, like, why is there a statue of Benedict Arnold's boot? And I think that what I tried to do with the book was have a conversation. This is not a lecture. And it's so important to me as a writer to have that conversation with the audience, and public radio is the way that I've done that over the years. So I'm an active contributor and participant in public radio, and I would just urge your listeners to continue to support great programming like this. It's the only place that we get to have conversations like this very often in today's media world. So I'm very grateful to you and to WOSU, and I hope your listeners are listening and opening up the phone lines for you.
1-866-897-9678. It's always fun to call during our show because there are people waiting, local Central Ohioans who have volunteered their time to take your calls and take your pledges. 1-866-897-9678 is the number to call, or you can go online to our secure server at WOSU.org. So, Back to Paul Revere.
Paul Revere. Who was this man, and what was he doing riding around at midnight? He's a fascinating story. I write about Revere, not only in Don't Know Much About History, but in some of my other books, a recent book called America's Hidden History that talks about some of the stories that the school books leave out. Revere, indeed, was a silversmith. He was also an artist and the maker of false teeth, which most people may not know. And he was very, very committed to the patriot cause. But he was of the artisan, the working class, the mechanics, as they were sometimes called in that time. And many of the other patriot leaders, the inner circle, the John Hancocks, the Sam Adamses, others in that inner, real inner sanctum, were really from the more elite class, the more aristocratic class. So Revere was, in a way, a connection between the well-to-do and the working class of Boston. And the well-to-do knew they needed those working class people, and they had much common ground. So interesting personality. He's most closely involved with a man named Joseph Warren, one of the most important founding fathers you've probably never heard of. And Warren was a physician. Warren is actually the one who's running the spy rings that are getting the information out of the British headquarters in Boston. And it's he who gives Paul Revere the orders that night to go on the ride. He knows that the British are leaving, and what are they doing? They were not going out to, take American Second Amendment rights away. They were going out to arrest John Hancock and Samuel Adams, who were in Concord at the time. Revere was one of several riders who set off that night. We know Billy Dawes was another one, and there was at least one other rider who's kind of gone down in history as anonymous. But Paul Revere's name happened to rhyme with "Listen, My Children, and You Shall Hear," so he gets top billing.
Uh-huh.
And Billy Dawes and the other riders were more or less forgotten. He did set up the signal, one if by land, two if by sea. And by sea, they meant were they coming across the Charles River. That had nothing to do with the actual sea, just to clear that up for people. And that's indeed how the British left in one of the worst-kept military secrets in history. It took hours for them to organize getting across the Charles River, which isn't too big if you've ever been to Boston. And so that gave Revere a head start. He was able to get to Lexington and Concord, although he was stopped along the way, and delivered the message to Hancock and Adams that the British indeed were coming, although that's not what he said. He said, the regulars are coming out. And he did rouse the countryside, and he was soon joined by others. And that's why that morning of April 19th on Lexington and then the Concord Green, the first shots in the Revolutionary War were fired. And interesting little two little tidbits. Paul Revere was later tried, court-martialed, because he had been involved in a very failed, disastrous military expedition in Maine. But one other interesting note about him: this man I mentioned, Joseph Warren, was killed at the Battle of Bunker Hill. Even though he was not a trained soldier, he wanted to be in the front lines with his men. He was shot and killed by the British, and they threw him in a mass grave. Months later, Revere goes back to find his body so he can be buried properly, and he identifies him by the false teeth that he had made for Dr. Joseph Warren. It was the first forensic dentistry in American history that I know of, but just one of those little tidbits, interesting tidbits from the human side of the story that the textbooks leave out.
My guest is Kenneth Davis, author of Don't Know Much About History, Everything You Need to Know About American History But Never Learned. We're talking about the 20th anniversary edition of the New York Times bestseller. It's our gift to you at the $120 pledge level. Thanks to Linda in Columbus, we have $1,600 to go by the end of the hour. So get the calls in. Any pledge over $60, by the way, gets the member card too. And that's good for discounts at some 200 restaurants and attractions in Central Ohio. It's a great deal, and I use mine all the time, and hope you will too. 1-866-897-9678 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you want to make that pledge right now, remember it's listener-supported, 89.7 NPR News, and this is All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you want to speak with our guest, he would love to talk with you, Ken Davis, author of Don't Know Much About History. So 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We do have some emails. Oh, by the way, I did say thanks to Linda in Columbus. We have an email from Ben. He says, learning history as an adult, I can't help but notice that much of what I learned as a child was slightly changed to be more reader or child friendly. For example, the story of Christopher Columbus and what kind of person he really was and the atrocities that were committed in his wake, or what our relationship was really like with the Native Americans. Even the real history regarding the spread of Christianity through Europe, as another example. Do you think that this is doing a disservice to our younger students? I truly believe that historical inaccuracies will only breed ignorance and will hinder our understanding of future events, especially if you believe that history repeats itself.
It is a great point and a really an important point, and I have a couple of reactions to it. First of all, I went down to a museum, a recreated Spanish village in Florida, some months ago or years ago when I was doing some research for another book. I was very interested in the whole Spanish period in America because it was overlooked in my textbooks that the Spanish were here, you know, for more than a century before the English arrived, and we really leave that out of our our school books, and as we become a more Hispanic country, that's going to be a more important story to tell. But I went to this recreated village, and there on the wall was a timeline of Florida, and it says 1565. The French are banished from Florida. Well, the French were not banished from Florida in 1565. Most people don't know there were French in Florida in 1565. They were the first pilgrims in America. They were Huguenots. They settled near what is now Jacksonville, started a colony called Fort Caroline, and the Spanish learned they were there and sent over a search and destroy mission. And that search and destroy mission founded St. Augustine. That's why St. Augustine was settled. It was a base from which to go out and destroy this French colony, not because it was French so much, but because it was Protestant. The first encounter of Europeans in what became America was a religious massacre. That's a story we should all know, we should tell, but nobody ever talks about the first pilgrims. And worse, in a museum, a historical museum, they said that the French were banished from Florida. Well, I actually went to the director of the museum and I said, that's really a disgrace. They weren't banished, they were murdered. And she said, well, you know, we have to be politically correct. And that just sent chills down my spine that a person in a historical museum could say such a thing. I think we're doing a much better job in school books and in places like Mount Vernon or Monticello, if you go there. They do a great job now of talking about Washington and Jefferson and their relationship with slaves. That wasn't talked about 40 or 50 years ago. So I think we've done a better job. I think kids who come up through school now have a better sense of what Columbus did. He is not the heroic sailor who proved the world was round anymore, but somebody who came here and in one of the great mistakes in history, the luckiest bloopers in history, discovered these people who he misnamed Indians and then proceeded to wipe them out, partially through very harsh treatment, partially through the introduction of diseases to which the Native Americans had no natural immunity. So, but the email is the listener's exactly right. These are stories we have to tell our children. Is there age appropriateness? Of course, but we can't tell bedtime stories and call it history.
There's a question in your book: if Christopher Columbus was so important, why don't we live in the United States of Columbus? What's America?
Well, I guess this is a perfect place to be discussing this question, isn't it? And by the way, there's a statue of Christopher Columbus that was given to the United States in 1992 for the 500th anniversary, and nobody wanted it. First of all, it's not a very attractive statue, apparently. It's also taller than the Statue of Liberty, so it's would require a substantial piece of real estate to
put
it up.
Somewhere down in South America now or something?
It's in Puerto Rico, and one of the mayors there has agreed to take it, but they can't come up with the land or the funds to put this thing together. It's something like 2,700 pieces. So Columbus has come a long way since the days that cities were named after him. But why America? America Vespucci was on one of Columbus's later voyages. He was also secretly in the employ of the Medici, the Italian banking family, and he writes a letter back to the Medici in which he says, this is not Asia, which is what Columbus thought he had found, some island outposts of Asia. This is a Mundus Novus, a new world. And in honor of that announcement, that discovery, when the first maps were made of the North and South America, the mapmaker put on the name Americus in honor of Americus Vespucci, and that's why we live in the United States of America and not the United States of Christopher.
1-866-897-9678. That's the number to call to make your pledge right now. Show your support for 89.7 NPR News and All Sides with Ann Fisher. Want to say thanks to Susan in Westerville and Chip in Blacklick and also Tom in Reynoldsburg. We're down to $1,300 to go before the end of the hour. Thanks so much for all your support at the $120 pledge level. Our gift to you is Ken Davis's newly revised Don't Know Much About History. It's the 20th anniversary edition of the New York Times bestseller. The subtitle, Everything You Need to Know About American History But Never Learned. It's a very big reference book. It is something you'll keep around for a long time. No reason to ever get rid of it until you get the 40th anniversary or something like that. 1-866-897-9678. You can go online to our secure server and make your pledge there as well, and give what you can afford. We appreciate anything that you can pledge to show your support for your public radio station. Aaron in New Albany, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Hi, good morning. Annie Kent, great show. Appreciate everything you got on here. Great facts and tidbits so far. I do have a comment and a question. First of which, one of the greatest things that we have here in our nation for preserving the history is national parks, state parks, things like that. You know, as a child, I had the wonderful opportunity of traversing the country, seeing all kinds of great things. You know, it's something that, you know, I treasure, and I think that, you know, every child should have a chance to see in their lifetime. I did have a question, though. I was understanding your book has been updated to, you know, include more recent things happening, such as Katrina and things like that. I was wondering what your opinion, Ken, was on the historical significance of, say, you know, things like the flooding in Iowa and the Midwest this year versus things like Katrina. You know, government's response to things like that, and what historical significance it may have in the future. So I'll take my answer off the air, and I appreciate your time, guys.
Thanks, Aaron.
That's a really interesting and intriguing question, because obviously Katrina, the scale and the horror of the destruction there was so evident. I was speaking to someone recently who said, you know, it's really interesting. We focus so much on New Orleans, but, you know, some of the other states around Louisiana, like Mississippi, got hit just as hard, and they just didn't seem to get as much attention. And I maybe sense a little bit of that sense from the caller as well. We're having a conversation in this country right now, although the conversation might be too polite, about what the appropriate role of government is in disaster. And you have people like Ron Paul and others suggesting that, you know, FEMA shouldn't exist. I'm speaking to you from Vermont, where we just got hit pretty hard by the tropical storm Irene, and houses were lost, and roads were washed out, and FEMA is here, and I think most Vermonters who deal with them are happy to see them. It's the question, I think, speaks to one. How come the media focuses on one disaster? Why does one disaster become more sexy, in a sense, than another? And then, what is the appropriate role of the government in responding to that? And I think those are fair and good and important questions to ask. You know, 3 weeks ago, not to change the subject, the Wall Street occupation was going on, and nobody was paying attention. And then all of a sudden, one or two stories start to trickle in, and then all of a sudden, everybody's paying attention. So there's certainly a pack mentality, has a lot to do with the visuals of it. If it's going to look good on TV, you're more likely to see it. And so that's part of the question of why we focus on one disaster as opposed to another. You know, there are earthquakes all the time in Alaska, but we don't see them, and they don't affect anybody, so they're not in the news. But the other conversation, which is about how the government responds, is a bigger conversation that I think is underpinning a lot of what's going on in the country right now, in terms of what is the appropriate role of government and for government. Is the government too big? This is certainly not the government that those gentlemen had in mind back in 1787 when they met in secret in Philadelphia with the doors closed and the windows shut.
1-866-897-9678. That's the number to call to make your pledge of support for WOSU and 89.7 NPR News and All Sides with Ann Fisher. right now. You can also go to WOSU.org, make your pledge online. We have $1,200 to go before the end of the hour. Thanks very much to Jill in Upper Arlington and Renata in Grove City. Thanks for your support. At the $60 level, remember, you can get the that's our basic membership at WOSU, and you can get the WOSU membership card, and it's good for discounts at some 200 area restaurants and other attractions. So that's a great deal, too, if you want to just get started and just join at the basic level and see how you like being a member of WOSU. 1-866-897-9678 or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you want to talk with Ken Davis, my guest this hour, author of the 20th anniversary edition of the New York Times bestseller, Don't Know Much About History. The book offers suggested readings for those who want to learn more and has a helpful index in the back for easy referencing. Indexes are my best friend. The book asks questions like, as we said earlier, if Christopher Columbus was so important, how come we don't live in the United States of Columbus? The book also asks, what was Sputnik, and can a man called Bubba become president? This book is a great reference book. It's also funny and entertaining, and it makes a great Christmas gift, by the way. Books are always great at Christmas, a great book for a gift for a birthday or holidays. If you're thinking about something to get somebody for Christmas who's a history buff, this is the perfect book. So 1-866-897-9678. We have $1,000 to go. Thanks to Ann in Columbus for that. 1-866-897-9678. I do want to get to our callers who have questions for Ken. So if you want to talk to Ken, 614-292-8513. Hi, Walter. You're in New Albany. Welcome to the show.
Yes, Ann. Thanks. Great show. I just wanted to comment on his comment about the bombing of Hiroshima being a humiliating time in this country. As one who just barely escaped having to go land in Japan, I would say that it was a great decision on the part. We would have lost so many Americans in that battle. So it has to do with some spinning of our history that I think is often done not to be accurate as to the time.
Oh, thanks for the call. I'm going to apologize. I don't think that I said it was humiliating, and I certainly didn't mean to imply that. What I said was that it's not discussed much. It's an embarrassing, an awkward conversation, and it doesn't get sufficient treatment. I think if you read my discussion of Hiroshima in the book, I ask exactly that question. Was it necessary? I call it Truman's choice in the book, because he was basically given this option, not even having known about the Manhattan Project. Harry Truman was not privy to the secret of the development of the atomic bomb. So this was really dropped in his lap after, of course, the great shock of the death of Franklin Roosevelt. And it was presented to him as, Mr. President, we can do this, use this bomb, which they truly did not even understand the real impact of it. And I include some writings from Truman's own diary about the bomb in my book. But he was presented with this option. We can use this bomb and perhaps end the war, or, you know, invade the Japanese islands. It will take hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of casualties on both sides. So I appreciate the caller's sentiment, and I think that my book actually does reflect exactly that moral uncertainty about that. My point was that we don't really discuss it enough in our history books.
To get that context. Thank you, Walter, for that call. Thanks to Linda in Columbus. We have $900 to go in just about 12 minutes. So get the calls in, make your pledge right now, and show your support for All Sides with Ann Fisher, for 89.7 NPR News, for all the things you love about your public media. 1-866-897-9678. That's the number to call. We have just 12 minutes left, and we have $900 to go to make our goal. Thanks so much to everybody for your support. Want to remind you, it's All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And every day, All Sides brings you interesting conversations with people like Ken Davis. Fascinating people who are experts in their field. And just once a year, we ask you to put a value on that. Make a pledge. Ken is an expert of American history and is here today to answer your questions. You can get his book, Don't Know Much About History, as a thank you gift at the $120 pledge level. Go to WOSU.org or call our volunteers. Thank you, volunteers, at 1-866-897-9678. We've got more calls, want to get to those, but we want you to make your call too and show your pledge of support. 1-866-897-9678. And thanks to everybody who has shown their support so far. Donna in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Donna.
Hi, thanks, Ann and Ken. I just want to thank you so much for bringing up this topic. I think, in general, Americans are very disconnected with their heritage, and I thank you for sharing the story about Paul Revere. If people are interested in learning more about Paul Revere, I encourage them to check into a program called Project Appleseed, which is all about reconnecting people with American heritage and rifle marksmanship. We run programs through volunteering throughout the United States, including in Ohio. We have one coming up this weekend, as a matter of fact, and we always say that it's the marksmanship that often brings people out, is kind of the hook, but then we tell the stories of the beginnings of the Revolutionary War, Paul Revere's ride, and all those things, and people of all ages come and walk away and say, wow, I didn't know that, and you can just see that fire in them to want to learn more, and it's a great program, so I wanted to put that out there for folks.
Thanks, Donna.
Sure.
And thanks for your call.
The Appleseed Project. Yeah, thank you so much. And Ken, I'm going to definitely add that piece about Joseph Warren and his teeth into my presentations that I do when I volunteer and help tell the heritage and the history during those weekends. So thanks for adding that.
Thank you. And thanks for all the calls today. It's wonderful to have this opportunity to have a conversation with readers. We often sit in our little dark offices and don't know actually who's out there, and we're trying to talk to them. And again, public radio gives me that opportunity. So I do hope that if you haven't pledged before, that this is a perfect time to start it. And if you are a regular, don't forget to keep the conversation going.
Thanks a lot, Donna, for that call. 614-292-8513. If you want to give us a call, if you want to show your support, just like Catherine did in Worthington, we have $750 to go and just about 9 minutes. So make the call right now, 1-866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org. At the $120 pledge level, this fabulous reference book, Don't Know Much About History, Everything You Need to Know About American History But Never Learned. It's the 20th anniversary edition of the New York Times bestseller. It's revised, updated, and expanded. So give us a call, 614-292-8513, if you want to talk with Ken. Mark, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mark.
So thank you. First, great show.
Thank you.
I'm an absolute lover of history, so appreciate it. I did want to ask the question with regard to, in your book, how much content you put on African Americans. And I think a lot of times when we coin the phrase African Americans, we kind of think of it like a subculture. But African Americans are, at this point in the game, in the history and context of America, we're first American. We're Americans first. And then culturally, the African pieces are heritage, if you will. But I wanted to just kind of ask you, because there's so many contributions that African Americans made, most of us are not even aware, things like elevators and the gas mask, the traffic light, the refrigerator, and so on and so forth. So when you think about those things, what did you do to address that in your book, just out of curiosity?
Great question, and thank you for it. It's a very important issue to me because growing up when I did in the 60s and early 70s, I had history books in which there were very few blacks or African Americans. There were very few women, and there were very few Native Americans. And that's certainly one of the things I tried to specifically address in Don't Know Much About History and the other books in my series, whether it's the book about the Civil War or my book A Nation Rising, which really talks about the growth of the country in the first half of the 19th century and how significant the slavery issue was in that time. So this is a very, very significant issue to me. For instance, I include the voices throughout this book of people throughout history, and one that comes to mind right away in writing about the Revolutionary War, I write about a man who talks about having fought with Washington, and he is a black man. And of course, Washington was confronted with this difficulty when he took over the army. There were blacks in Massachusetts with guns, and this was not going to fly with Washington's fellow slaveholders back in Virginia and South Carolina. So he really forbid the further recruitment of blacks into the Continental Army. It was only after the British announced that they would give freedom to any slave who ran away and joined them, they would give them emancipation, that Washington had to reconsider his. So this is certainly an issue that predates the Revolution, certainly predates the Civil War. Slavery is the great stain on American history, and the contributions, as you point out, of African Americans throughout history have been enormous and enormously overlooked. And I do try and address that in Don't Know Much About History.
Thanks to Jessica in Columbus. And by the way, Mark, thanks for that great question. And thanks for listening. Jessica in Columbus, thanks for helping us out today. Just $600 to go. We're so close to this goal. We have just about 5 minutes to go. If you're one of those folks out there nodding when someone says they just love this show, they love history, they love shows like this, then maybe, and you haven't shown your support yet, now's the time to do it. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org and make that pledge. Whatever you can afford is what we appreciate from you. 1-866-897-9678. And at the $120 pledge level, once again, you'll get a copy of the hardcover, Don't Know Much About History by Ken Davis. He's our guest today. We're glad to have Ken on any time. We appreciate Ken joining us today, though, for the pledge drive. It's an important time for us, and it's an important time for you out there to show your support and tell us that this is the kind of shows, this is the kind of topics that you appreciate. Thanks to Karen in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. Hello, Colorado. They're out there listening in Colorado. Thanks so much, Karen. We have $300 to go. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. And thanks so much for your show of support. Jerry in Grove City, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Jerry.
Hello, I got a standardized testing story to lay on you.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember back in the old days prior to the No Child Left Behind, we used to have a mandated course in Ohio history in eighth grade. And when it came to the end of the school term, about May, the teacher popped a test on us to see what people had learned over the year. And when they graded the test, I got an A on it. But the next closest grade was a low D, and the rest of the class, even the people with the supposed brains, all got Fs on it.
What happened?
Well, that's what they asked me. Why would I remember it? And nobody else seemed to be paying attention. That was the only thing I could think of, was I actually read the book and I paid attention.
All right. Well, that's a great feeling.
Well, it was, but it's like they say, they teach the test now, so that probably wouldn't happen anymore. But this is an example of what happens when you don't teach the test, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really important point, Ann, and thanks for the call. I've heard this so many times over the past 10 years in particular from teachers, and I speak to a lot of teachers around the country. And let me just say that history teachers in particular that I meet and speak to are passionate about their subject, and they feel that they're pulled away from teaching history, especially since No Child Left Behind, to actually, do test preparation, which is doesn't involve history. And so that's another reason, another chink in this problem that we have with learning history.
Jerry, thanks so much for that call. We have $200-$300 to go in 2 minutes. We can make the goal. If you're one of those folks out there who are enjoying this show, this is the kind of thing you like to listen to, this is where you're going to find it, at 89.7 NPR News. Nowhere else. 89.7 NPR News brings this to you all the time, and we love it too. That's why we do it. So show us your support and help us bring these kinds of programs to you. 1-866-897-9678. Or go online to WOSU.org and make that pledge right now. Thanks to Jay in Cambridge, we have $180 to go. 1-866-897-9678. We're coming up on a minute and a half to go. Before we do, I want to say thanks to Ken Davis for joining us today and sharing the insights he has from his book, Don't Know Much About History. Ken, thanks so much.
Well, thank you for having me. As I hope it comes across that I like this stuff, and I think it's fun and interesting. And when people hear about it the way I talk about it, I think they chime in, and people say, gee, I wish they taught me that in school. I hear that time and time again.
Right.
And it just goes back to this idea that history is about real people. And if we tell the real stories of real people and not the tidy, sanitized version or the just memorize the dates version, people pay attention.
Well, thanks again, and thanks to everybody. We just have $180 to go, 45 seconds before we're at the end of the hour. Show your support for 89.7 NPR News. Make the call right now, 1-866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org. We need you to make your vote with your pocketbook today, now. And thanks to everybody who showed their support to this hour. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU 8 HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.